Thursday, August 2nd. Thanks for tuning in to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. This is an extra special preview podcast because Tom Fornelli and I will be giving you the Eye on College Football Preseason Awards. And joining me from Chicago is Tom Fornelli. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing excellent this morning, Chip. Just looking over the coaches' poll and seeing which coaches haven't been watching college football lately.
Yeah, it's the it's pretty. I saw somebody say this earlier, but it is very ridiculous that you know, the commissioners, and we spent so much time in the off season talking about how the current BCS system is flawed and the coaches poll is, you know, is inaccurate, but yet we're still going to be using this for two more years.
Yeah, and it's going to be causing a lot of debate for the next 2 years, as it always does. But in the end, I think it's mostly harmless because, I mean, the coaches will definitely overrate and underrate some teams, but I think that when you get to the top, which is what really matters for the BCS polls, I mean, I think everybody's got a pretty good grasp of who the best teams in the country are. It's generally from 11 to 25 where it's like, what the heck are you thinking?
What was it you were saying earlier today? Texas at 15?
Yeah, it just proves that most of the coaches who voted haven't watched Texas since 2009 or so, because it's the last few years. I mean, Texas could be at number 15 before the season's over. It could be in the top five, depending on how they play. But it's just right now, if you're basing it on what they've done, there's no way in the world that Texas deserves to be ranked at 15th after coming off an 8-5 season following a 5-7 season. They didn't even qualify for a bowl the year before. So they've won 13 games in the last 2 years, and you're going to throw them in the top 15 just because they're Texas and you think they'll be good.
Yeah, no, that's that. Everyone just automatically thinks that even though they've got major concerns at quarterback and with the offense in general, that all of a sudden everything will be fixed just because it's Texas. Though I will say that defense does look like it's going to be nasty.
Yeah, but that defense was nasty last year, and they only won 8 games. So, yeah. I mean, you don't know. Texas could win the Big 12. I'm not trying to say they're good. They're terrible and they don't deserve to be ranked, but it's just, This is the crux of preseason polls. Are you ranking these teams based on what they are or what they were or what you know, it's what you think they can be? That's why preseason polls just in general to me are some of the dumbest things in the world. And plus the fact that they have an impact on the actual season itself, because you know, if you start off at number one, unless you lose 4 games, you're probably gonna be in the top 10 all season, whether you deserve to be there or not. So I mean, it definitely has an impact once the season goes along.
Yeah, exactly. It's all right. Now, speaking of the Big 12, that's actually where what we're going to do. Tom and I have each prepared some unique awards that we're going to give out. You know, we've spent a lot of time going through the preseason all-conference teams, the preseason all-American teams, and all of that is going to be found on CBSSports.com just starting today on August 2nd. Throughout the next week, you'll see all of that being rolled out. But these are some awards and some preseason honors that didn't quite make the cut. The editors, you know, tossed these ones back. We didn't, you know, we weren't able to get all the awards we wanted, so we're delivering them to you here on this podcast. And the first Eye on College Football preseason award is one that I know you and I both, Tom. You know, we are very, very passionate about our NCAA Football 2013. And my EA Sports NCAA Football Award for video game numbers in 2012 is going to Geno Smith of West Virginia. If you look at the fact that he had, you know, over 4,300 yards last year, 31 touchdowns, and that was in the Big East. You know, you covered the Big 12 last year. You got to know that there's going to be more opportunities than he had playing in Big East play, where after Geno Smith scores a touchdown, you give it to Gary Nover, Chase Dodd. Instead, you're giving it back to Seth Dagey. You're giving it back to Landry Jones. I just think that with more snaps, Geno Smith's going to be putting up even more video game numbers.
Yeah, I mean, in the Big 12, with those Big 12 defenses, it's possible that, you know, West Virginia could be running 300 plays on that offense every week, the way those offenses work. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty good call, especially because it's his second year in Dana's system. So last year, you know, he put up those incredible numbers, and he didn't really have the complete grasp of the system. This year, they're going to open it up, complicate it, quote-unquote, a bit more, give him more to do. And I think, yeah, I agree. He's going to have some insane numbers. Whether West Virginia will, you know, be going to another BCS game, I don't know. But it won't be Geno Smith's fault.
Well, that, I mean, yeah, that's West Virginia, and like you said, Texas could win the Big 12. I do think the Big 12 is wide open. I think Oklahoma is they might be the favorite, but they are by no means the far and away. All right, Tom, what is your first Eye on College Football preseason award?
My first award goes to the greatest motivational catchphrase from a head coach this season to his team to get them ready for the year, and they are ranked in the top 10, so it seems to be working already, and that's Jonnu Smith's. I'm not even sure I could say this on the podcast, so I'll edit it a bit, but it's his get your pee hot catchphrase that he's hit with the Razorbacks since taking over for Bobby Petrino. And frankly, I don't think there has ever been a motivational phrase better than that. I want a t-shirt with that on it. I would wear it every day, everywhere I go.
Wait, get your pee hot?
Well, it's not pee, but it begins with the same letter, and it's a, you know, I don't know if we could say it on the podcast.
Well, say it. Hey, I'll edit it out. Just say it.
Get your f***ing shot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you could say that. We could get away with that.
I don't know if we have a family audience. I don't want to, you know, be throwing that out there. It might be kids listening, Chip.
Yeah, that's true. Kids could be listening. That's a pretty solid. And he said that on Twitter, right?
Yeah, he broke out the GYPH hashtag on Twitter this morning, actually. So he's having his team get their urine warm, getting ready for the season.
That is definitely the greatest motivational catchphrase that that any player could have. And Jonnu Smith, you know, we talked about this before on the podcast, but I mean, he is playing with house money. He is completely. I'd believe it if he was going for onside kicks, fake punts. I mean, Arkansas is a very unstable team in possibly a good way, especially when you consider that you might need to be unstable playing in the same division as LSU and Alabama.
Yeah, Arkansas is going to be it's going to be a team that's, you know, you kind of want to watch just for the reasons you say, because Jonnu Smith really does have nothing to lose. What's going to happen? He's going to get fired. I mean, he didn't have the job before. It's not technically the job was never supposed to be his in the first place. So all he can do is stay. And, yeah, he's going to be pulling a whole lot of fun. I mean, if he's screaming, get your piss hot at his players, you can only imagine what kind of plays he's going to be calling.
Exactly. All right, this my next award, it's a two-part award. There is, you know, the most likely to succeed, least likely to succeed. This is most likely to fight a bear and win. And then most likely to fight a bear and play dead. Most likely to fight a bear and win. I've got Jadeveon Clowney, defensive end, South Carolina. Reasons pretty self-explanatory. I believe that if he got in the ring with a bear, he would win, you know?
No, I'd put Clowney in there. I think you probably also gave consideration to Barkevious Mingo, because I'm not even sure the bear would want to fight Barkevious Mingo.
a bear would play dead fighting Mingo.
Yeah. The bear would tap out so fast. He'd be like, you know what? I got salmon to go catch. I'd rather be elsewhere right now.
And then most likely to fight a bear and play dead. Now, it saddens me because Kentucky quarterback Morgan Newton was who I wanted to put there. But it looks as though he's not even going to be starting this season. So I'm going to go with Pittsburgh quarterback Tino Sinceri. You know, the Panthers gave up 63 sacks last year, and that's just experience. You know, when it comes to playing dead with a bear coming at you, I think Sinceri's just got the experience under his belt to be able to do it well.
Yeah, so, like, coaches will stress to their quarterbacks, they'll have them work on reps on their seven-step drops. I think with Sinceri, it's more of a six-step drop and fall.
Yeah.
I think just based on previous experience, it's been beaten into him Pavlovian style. So it's he takes six steps and falls and just prays he doesn't get hurt.
Yeah, that's what I figure. And then, you know, that's just going to be a skill of his that, you know, Paul Christ hopefully is going to get him more into handing the ball off to Ray Graham than falling. So that's his challenge, though. What's your next award, Tom?
Mine is for the most defensive/insecure fan base in college football. And obviously, the obvious choice for this would be Penn State. But as we all know, the NCAA has ruled them ineligible for such awards. So I had a tough time choosing between Texas A&M and Missouri. As you know, on the blog, I've been covering the Big 12 the last few years. And I have found during that time that Texas A&M fans and Missouri fans are quite sensitive if you slight their team in any way. And now that both of those schools are moving to the SEC, where life is going to be just a little bit tougher, I feel like that's only going to increase this year. But I'm giving the award to Texas A&M just because they're in the West Division, whereas Missouri will probably have a bit of an easier time in the East. So I have a feeling we're going to have a lot of angry Texas A&M fans this year when they're not ranked in the top 10 because they're 0-4. I mean,
yeah, defensive fan bases and insecure fan bases, just like any other passion, when you get to the SEC, you're just going to see it inflate. So just imagine, I'm just imagining all of the insecurity that we've seen over the last couple years, and now it's only going to be injected with HGH as it grows even more with the SEC ego.
Yeah, there'll be, you know, nightmares of tides rolling in, stuff like that. It's going to be tough. They'll get over it eventually. They will adjust. I believe in them. But this 2012, it's going to be a rough adjustment for them as fans.
Do you think what is the best case finish, you think, for Texas A&M? Do you think that the fourth place in the division, that's going to be the best that it gets? Or do you think they could even get that?
I think fourth place is what they should, you know, be aspiring to. If I think there's a possibility, I mean, if things go wrong at, like, Arkansas, people get hurt and John L. Smith, the whole thing just falls apart, if the pee is not warm enough, then I think that Texas A&M might sneak up to third, but they need help to get there. I think fourth would be the most realistic expectation.
Yeah, I agree with you there. My next award is the Freshman 15 Award, and this is not Freshman 15 as in the weight that I put on my freshman year in college, but this is Freshman 15. Like, your 15 minutes of fame are going to get started very early. This is, you know, Marcus Lattimore, what, you know, took this on in 2010. DeAnthony Thomas, you know, in 2011. Your name recognition happens right away, which in college football, you know, there's only a few freshmen each year that are going to be able to do this. And I've got a couple people that I'm tossing in here, and I'm interested to get your opinion, Tom. I think that it's going to be three wide receivers, either Doyle Green Beckham at Missouri, Stephon Diggs at Maryland, or Nelson Aguilar at USC. And a big part of that, I think, is also Silas Red coming over from Penn State, because that means he will be able to move to wide receiver. Of those three wide receivers, who do you think is going to be able to start their 15 minutes of fame early?
I would go with Doriel just at Missouri, because there's going to be the definite spot for him in the first team. Whereas with Aguilar at USC, behind Marquise Lee and Robert Woods, I don't know if he's going to get as many opportunities from the start. So I would go with Doriel just because he's going to be one of their featured weapons right from the start, along with TJ Moe.
Yeah, that's true. I'd forgotten about TJ Moe too, and I'd say keep your eye on Stephon Diggs. It's not like there is.
Well, you know, that's a good point. At Maryland, there's not exactly a lot already in the cupboard there that hasn't already left and found a new kitchen. So, yeah, that one could come out real quick, too.
What's your next award?
My next award is the Stay in School Award, which it's already happened, but I want to give it to Matt Barkley. He took the mantle from Andrew Luck, although I don't think Barkley would have been the top pick in the draft this year. Last year when Andrew Luck did it, I questioned it because he was already going to be the top pick in the NFL draft. And I know he wanted to come back to school to get his education and maybe play for the national title, but I didn't consider Stanford to really be a national title contender last year. Whereas for Barkley this year, USC, what he's coming back to, I fully understand the move because screw the education, you know, he could win a national title this year. So that I get.
Yeah, no, he's coming back to, you know, and everybody in that program is talking unfinished business. I mean, there's Lane Kiffin just absolutely wrote the book on how to navigate a program through NCAA sanctions. And now that's going to be what Ohio State, North Carolina, likely Miami, possibly Oregon, they're going to be following this lead. And it's so funny to me to think that, you know, one of the most important aspects of coaching that I think is going to be in the future is going to be navigating through sanctions, and Lane freaking Kiffin is the one who might have done it best. And yeah, the Trojans will be competing for a national title, and it's not going to be surprising if they're the ones that end the SEC streak. And they had almost an even split of first place votes with Alabama and LSU, right?
Yeah, they actually had more first-place votes than LSU. LSU, of the top three teams, had the least amount of first-place votes, which is kind of strange.
Yeah. But that means that everyone must have had those three as your top three, and more people had LSU at 2 rather than having them at 3 or at 1 or mixed around.
Yeah, you have to consider, I mean, USC technically would have the easiest road there at 2 because, I mean, Oregon won't be easy to get past. They'll likely have to beat Oregon twice, which won't be easy. But other than that, there's really not a whole lot on USC's schedule where you're sitting there saying, well, that team's going to have a problem. So if they did get to the title game and they're likely playing someone from the SEC, the SEC defenses have been great at stopping offenses in the title games the last few years. But this USC offense will probably be the best offense that any SEC defense has faced. So, yeah, I think they've got a good shot to do it.
All right. My next one is going to be, you know, we mentioned John L. Smith on Twitter earlier, and this is another two-parter. You know, someone that uses Twitter, the Twitter all-star, someone that uses Twitter to their advantage, and, you know, the Twitter fail, you know, someone who I think might at some point in the season really screw themselves up by putting something out there on Twitter that one of us will likely screen grab and post. First, the more fun one, Twitter fail. I think Tyler Bray having a Twitter account is extremely dangerous at all times. Yeah, I cannot imagine how many times his friends or the people that are close to him might have to talk him out of hitting the send button, because his just general demeanor leads me to believe that at some point this season, if enough Tennessee fans get on his case, he's going to lash out and say the wrong thing. And my Twitter all-star, two guys that seem to be very fluent and use Twitter to their advantage are Heisman candidates Matt Barkley and Monty Ball. I think both of them have been very interactive. They seem to get it. They have a lot of followers, a lot of fans. And I think they will be, you know, a good follow for a college football fan. Is there anybody on Twitter, good or bad, that you've noticed from players?
You know who I love that actually could fall in both of those categories is Tyrann Mathieu.
Oh yeah, the good and the bad from Honey Badger.
Yeah, because you know he says, you know, he's not as vanilla as Barkley and Ball are on Twitter, where it's just, you know, fight on and on Wisconsin and stuff like that. Where Matthew's out there giving like relationship advice, which is, it's always hilarious to me when the 21-year-old kid is telling everybody else relationship advice. You know, but it's just, I have a feeling with Matthew, if LSU loses a game or, you know, he just breaks up with a girl at some point during the season, there can definitely be some screen grab worthy tweets coming out of LSU from the Honey Badger this season.
Well, yeah, he was the whole off season. There was the relationship advice about like how to deal with females and all the things like that. I almost want to, you know, tell Matthew, like, and with a lot of athletes in school, you know, you'd find that like, you don't understand, man, like the world you're living in with females is not real. Like you are operating with a different set of rules. I appreciate you wanting to give advice on relationships to all of your followers, but I promise you they are not working with the same game that you are, Tyrann.
Yeah, no, there's different motives and there's different, let's just say, emotional levels from college kids and college relationships than there are in the ones of our world.
Yeah, slightly different. All right, you got, do you have another award on deck?
Yeah, I got the Quantum Leap Award, actually. This one goes to Texas State, led by quarterback Scott Bakula, finally making the leap to the FBS level. And, you know, Scott Bakula's Sinbad, Kathy Ireland's leg. I think Texas State has a good chance in the WAC this year. And they also, aside just from those three Hollywood superstars, they also have a quarterback named Duke D. Lancelotti and an offensive lineman named Charlie Will Tuttle. Now, if a team with those names and that star power isn't built to win like a four-team WAC or whatever's left in that conference, then I don't know who is.
That's the way that Texas State goes down in history. And you could say that for, you know, anybody in the WAC. You want to be the team, like, what an awesome thing to say is, you know, the last year of the WAC, we won it.
Yeah, I mean, nobody, you'll be the defending champion for the rest of your life.
All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap on this. That obviously, first weekend of games, you'll find a lot of headliners, you know, big non-conference matchups. You'll find also a lot of cupcakes. Are there any games from the first weekend that stand out to you as ones that you're really looking forward to?
I think the obvious choice for the first weekend of the season would be the Alabama-Michigan game. I mean, it's two teams that are both ranked in the top 10 of the new coaches' polls right there. So that's big enough draw for it on its own. And then it's just, I think Alabama's favored, and for a good reason, seeing as how they're the defending champions. But I'm just interested to see how an SEC defense, that Alabama defense, which is also bringing back, you know, a couple new starters at key positions, handles a quarterback like Denard Robinson. It'll be interesting to see, just because the new starters in Alabama's defense won't have that experience yet outside of practice. So it'll be new to them as well. And when you're facing somebody like Denard, who's just, you know, multi-dimensional, really doesn't describe what he can do for an offense. So I think that game could be a lot more interesting than most expect it to be, even though I still think Alabama ends up winning it.
We still don't have an official word on whether Toussaint plays, right? Or do we know?
No, we don't. I don't. At Big Ten Media Days last week, Brady Hoke said he hadn't made a decision on it yet. But I, just given the history of Michigan, I would assume that Toussaint will be suspended for that first game, yes.
For the entire first game?
Yeah.
I've got a game picked out that I'm interested in, and it's Clemson Auburn. You know, last year's game was obviously awesome, but Auburn is going to be they are coming out and they've got a lot to prove this season, especially after last year didn't exactly go the way that they had hoped. And that is going to be in the Georgia Dome. That's going to be a primetime game. That is the SEC's backyard, and you know that Auburn and Clemson, you know, that non-conference rivalry has produced a lot of great games over the last couple years. I think that the last two or three have all been decided by a touchdown. And this will be another test, sort of like you said, knowing Michigan, I think Toussaint is suspended. Knowing Clemson, I think Sammy Watkins is only going to get a quarter suspension. And it'll be interesting to see how people react to that, because Sammy Watkins means a ton to the Tigers, obviously. And Dabo Swinney at ACC Media Days said, you know, I'm going to do what's best for Sammy and for our program. And the way he said it, what's best for Clemson is going to be to have him on the field for at least a half of that game.
And it's also, I mean, every game is important, obviously, but this is a game I think that's really important for Clemson, just because the last memories we have of that team are it getting absolutely destroyed by West Virginia in the Orange Bowl. So I think Clemson kind of needs to come out of the gate and make a statement right away against a team like Auburn, or else there's going to be, you know, from week one on, it's going to be, oh, well, Clemson's already overrated. They're not that good. They've been killed. So I think it's a very important game for them just to win. So, yeah, I agree. I think Sammy Watkins might miss a quarter, but he'll be there when they need him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, that about wraps up these Eye on College Football blog preseason awards. Remember, for this and all the podcasts, you can find them on the iTunes store, and they're for free. We just give them away. It is a fire sale. We just give away all of our podcasts for free. So be sure to subscribe so that you get them automatically. Remember to follow the Eye on College Football on Twitter, at IonCFB. And remember to follow Tom Fornelli, at Tom Fornelli. We are really excited about this upcoming season, and we hope that you, the listeners and the fans, will spend it with us. Thanks so much for tuning in.